I was super excited for this generation in 2020, 2021. It looked promising the way things were going, but it's weird. This is definitely the U.S. generation I like the least. It's weird because the 2017 one that missed the World Cup, they just sucked. It's like,
yeah,
it's like old washed players. Pulisic was too young, even though he was probably the best player already of that team. Bruce Arena in charge, they had fired Jurgen. So I didn't hate it. I was just saying, like, it's weird that we didn't qualify, but they suck. Like, they literally suck. So, I was just like, whatever. I was like, they just suck. Now, this generation, there was a lot of hope. And they're entitled. Some of them are pricks.
Yeah. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of the 343 Podcast, where we work tirelessly to elevate the level of discourse and practitionership here in American soccer. Today, we have Filippo Silva, the man behind the X-Handle Tactical Manager you may have heard of, or the man behind the YouTube channel Tactical Manager TV. I thought it was about time, after a few years of having back and forths with him, to bring him on the show. You know, I advocate for independent media here, and I think he fits the bill. He's not employed by anyone in the establishment. He's not compromised, in my opinion, I may be wrong, by anybody in the establishment. So far, so good. And critically important, he knows ball. He knows actually some football. It's a very rare breed to have both independence and knowing ball. And it's about time here in American soccer we start elevating the independent voices, because Lord knows, and you know, that the establishment does not elevate these voices. You will never see like MLS elevating 343 or MLS or US soccer elevating Tactical Manager Filippo Silva. And if you see somebody being elevated by those entities, you know that those entities are compromised. Those reporters are compromised. The journalists are compromised. The ones posing as independents are compromised. And what does that mean? That means they're basically just peddling the establishment's worldview, the establishment's agenda, which is harmful for the ecosystem, guys. Okay? So I hope you enjoy this one. Lots of gold nuggets. Of course, if you're a coach, you want to go to 343coaching.com. There are free and premium coaching education programs for you there. It is based on the pioneering, yes, pioneering, even revolutionary work of Brian Kleiben, with decades worth of youth soccer experience here in the United States. If you want your teams to play possession-based football, dominating the football, having the abundance of the ball throughout the courses of your game, and winning, you go to 343coaching.com and you learn the methodology and you level up for real. Parents, we all know that you guide your kids. You have the greatest influence on your kids. You need to be aware of the American soccer ecosystem just as much as a practitioner. I know that is a tall task to ask, but we've codified all of our experience and work from U9 through U19 up to and including the better part of a decade's worth of work in the professional environment. We've seen countless cycles of players come and go. We know what works, we know what doesn't work, et cetera, et cetera. And we've codified it for you at 343masterclass.com. So coaches, 343coaching.com. Parents, 343masterclass.com. And last but certainly not least, for the coaches coaching the little ones in the 7-versus-7 format, you go to 7v7. coaching.com. All right, everybody, without further ado, here we go. What do you usually use, Filippo? Do you use Zoom? What do you use?
I use StreamYard.
Oh, StreamYard. Got it. Okay, okay.
Yeah, because it's more customizable. Sometimes I want to throw a video so you don't have to throw it with the editing after. I also use StreamYard for live streams, so it just facilitates a bit more. But it there is a monthly fee that we pay. It's like $40, I think.
Something. Oh, that's not bad. That's not bad at all. Yeah, we pay like $20 for this thing. Does StreamYard give you like independent tracks for every person?
What do you mean? Like a separate studio?
No. Like, so every audio and video file is separate, you know, or do you just do all of your editing and all that stuff within StreamYard itself?
No, it just comes in all together. We just get the recording, because usually, well, part of it is a live stream. So the live stream, that doesn't matter, right? It's, what's done is done. And when I have a guest, it's just all recorded and all at once. And then we just use that for the video.
Got it. Okay, because we do a whole bunch of post-production, right? So I'll be able to get the video tracks separately. Like your video track is uploaded to the cloud, then my video track is uploaded to the cloud, and then we import that into a program called Descript. I don't know if you've heard of Descript. And all our post-processing is done there. So Descript does all the transcription. You're able to customize, you know, the backgrounds. You're able to do a whole bunch of things. But I was just curious, man, what you had used, because sometimes when I send the link for us to meet up, they're like, what is Zencastr? You know, so, but.
Well, I've used it before. It's just, I try to keep things as simple as I can for uploading after. And in StreamYard, we don't need to change the background because I already leave a standard background, and it just makes it a lot easier when I have a guest just to quickly get it done. Because then I just record an intro, we edit the intro, and everything else is just the StreamYard recording. There's no editing required. Just makes it easier because I post a lot, like twice, sometimes three times a week. If I have to try, and the videos that I fully edit take too much time. So I have to try to find a balance where I can actually upload the amount.
Yeah. Well, the good thing is, because I saw one of your live streams just now, because I didn't do any preparation. I rarely do preparation for chats with folks because I like it to be more organic and less interviewee, if that makes sense. But I'm like, hey, you know what? I need to tune into some of this stuff. So I listened to the episode you last did regarding college soccer. And then I listened to your live stream regarding Gio Reyna and the conspiracy theory, MLS and all that sort of stuff. And I don't think you have to do much editing because you flow with it so naturally and there aren't big breaks between one topic and another. So I can see how that works. For me, I'm a little bit clunky and I'm like, oh shit, I need to cut some things out, you know, edit some things in.
It's, five Red Bulls and you're good.
Yeah. Well, I'm drinking my Celsius here. But hey, thanks for coming on, dude. It's been a long time coming. I look back at our Twitter history and the first time we ever interacted was in 2022, like 3 years ago. And you know how it is on X or on Twitter, like you just don't know the person. So I think we had a little bit of a schism, nothing serious, just a little bit of a schism.
I don't even remember. I've gotten so many issues on X. I don't even remember what it was.
Yeah, same here. I had to look it up. I'm like, well, I wonder when our first little interaction was. And it was basically coverage of the U20 World Cup. That you did a lot of, and I was kind of criticizing the shit coverage that existed out there, but it wasn't directed towards you, but you chimed in. You're like, hey man, like I'm here, I'm independent, I'm not doing shit coverage. And like, I don't even know who you are, man.
Well, it's just that also, I think we might even talk about this throughout the episode. It's like, depending on the culture, the soccer culture you come from, if you disagree with me in an aggressive way, like if it's in Brazil, I'm sure Argentina is the same, Mexico, England, right? Stewart, that I had for the college interview, he was aggressive towards me. I was aggressive back. But after that, we're cool. We're just like, we're discussing soccer. In American soccer culture, if you're aggressive towards someone, they're like, whoa, man, what are you doing? You can't do this to me. And it's like, dude, we're just talking. Like, as soon as we're done with this topic, we're cool. But right here, we disagree. And it's just in the U.S. soccer space, when someone approaches like that, you're already, everyone gets very defensive.
Yeah.
That's why the interview with Stewart was different. He's British. So he didn't care who I was. He was right at me right there. And I was right back at him. So it was a lot different. And then you see other channels on YouTube that will have a guest and even American landscape. And the approach is completely different. It's almost like they don't want to challenge the guest and they don't want to be challenged. It's U.S. soccer.
Yeah. And eventually I do want to get into that. Like, why is it the way it is? But I want to preface everything by saying we need independent media, Filippo. And I know I presume that you've seen me harp on that string for a long time. And I view you as one of those guys, right? So I'm like, I think we've reached a point where we need to kind of coalesce as independent guys and kind of organize a little bit better. In my opinion, of course, because the challenge that I see out there in the system is the establishment. They're all organized and we aren't, right? They all support each other and we don't. So that's one of the reasons I want to bring you on, aside from me respecting a lot of what you've done in the media space and also like your soccer knowledge. But my audience may not know all about Filippo. What's your last name? Is it Silva?
Silva, yeah.
Yeah, got you. Hi. I took a guess. What's a common Brazilian name? But anyway,
It's you probably have a good probability if you guess Silva. Yeah, it's a good one.
So maybe, I don't know, you can give a brief rundown of, you know, your background, you know, what led you to who you are right now.
Yeah, so, I mean, in terms of covering soccer online, that only happened because of COVID. I've always been involved with soccer since I was a little kid. My dad is Brazilian. I was even born in Brazil. Then we moved to California when I was very young. Then we went back to Brazil when I was a kid till my early teenager years. Then we were back in New York. And most recently, I'm obviously living in Florida. But I just always talked a lot about soccer, was involved in soccer, played here a little bit when I was younger, and even got into a little bit of coaching at a youth level, right? Like Orlando City Soccer School, the first one here in Orlando, I was the head coach with some former professional Brazilian players that still work there to this day. Later on, I left because of my company and because of YouTube, which I don't have to get into that. But it just always, I was always involved with soccer, and I don't want to get into the details because it'll be too boring. But during COVID, I was bored at home. I have a soccer company in Central Florida for young kids. It's an after-school soccer program, mainly to introduce soccer to the kids. It's not really because, I mean, we can even talk about this later on. We have the tendency to overcoach young kids in the U.S. where at those ages, they need to play. They need to have fun. They have to fall in love with the ball. They need to want to play the sport and not fill the field with cones and try to micromanage a 5 or a 6-year-old. It doesn't come natural. It doesn't work. So that's one of the things I have. And with COVID, I was locked in at home bored. And with a friend of mine named Dustin, he's also part of the channel, but background stuff like editing and all that. He's like, hey, just start covering soccer on YouTube. Because, I mean, what else are you going to do here? I'm stuck at home for God knows how long at this point. And honestly, we started covering South American soccer in English. That was one of the target audiences, and U.S. soccer. But we thought that South American soccer in English would blow up. In U.S. soccer, we thought there would be no interest because even in the U.S., following the national team always felt like something you do isolated. There's not enough people that care. You want to watch your friends. No one wants to watch it outside of the World Cup, of course. But the U.S. soccer videos started to gain much more traction than the South American ones in English. And then we're just like, all right, so let's just keep going with it. And then it started to grow and a lot of things happened. And it's been enjoyable so far. And I met a lot of good people throughout this journey here and some not so good people too. But well.
Would you say, it's interesting you say that you got a lot of traction with the U.S. men's national team in American soccer. Would you say that you had a misconception prior to that, that, oh, soccer's not big enough here, like nobody gives a shit or whatever, and you changed your mind? Yeah.
I think, no, I still think it's too, well, I don't think it's too small. I always knew it was big. I always knew that. It's big enough, right? The amount of fans that are in this country is enough. I just thought there wasn't much interest in U.S. soccer specifically. And to be honest, I still think that is true. There's a lot of soccer fans in the U.S. There's not enough U.S. soccer fans or MLS fans, for the matter. We can put it that way. That, I think, is, I share the same thought. Because even going back, like when we were in New York, for example, I remember, because I lived in Brazil for a while with my dad, and he would take me to as many Palmeiras games as he could. And I remember what that felt like for me, for him, for the fans in the stadium, for everyone around. And then when we were in New York, for example, I even remember, not remember, I was a little kid. We were in California and the Galaxy would play, I think, in the Rose Bowl in Pasadena back then. So I saw recordings of my dad when I was like 4 or 5. And there was like Galaxy advertisement in LA. But even when we went to New York, I started to notice this with MLS. First, when David Beckham went to the Galaxy, I wanted his jersey. I was a kid and I was like, I want Beckham's jersey. So my dad got me the jersey. And then when we were living in New York, more specifically Long Island, I remember it was like, want to go to the Red Bull game. And why would we go there? It was like, oh, Thierry Henry is here. And to myself, I was always thinking, it's like, okay, cool. I definitely want to watch Thierry Henry live, but that's not the reason I would go to watch a club. Like, it doesn't matter who plays for your club. What matters is your club. And then I saw the same thing when we moved to Orlando. Because when we got to Orlando, I was still in college. My parents moved here. And during the summer, I came here. And they were like, hey, we got to go to an Orlando City game. I'm like, oh, cool. I'm always down for a soccer game. But why am I that? Because Kaká is playing. And I was like, so in MLS, we're just going to keep going to games because one guy is playing. That's what's going to happen. And I mean, we're seeing this with Messi right now, right? No one cares about Inter Miami, but they want to go see Messi, which is fine. And I'm sure if Messi played for Boca or River and he went to play in Brazil, they would pack the stadium to watch Messi get beat up by their club, not to go watch Messi specifically. But in terms of that, to your question, I just think there was an interest for U.S. soccer, U.S. men's national team in general. And I mean, I guess that might have changed a little bit. I started to see, no, there is a portion of this fan base that, one, understands the game, even though our media thinks they're stupid. They're not. They understand it. Otherwise, I wouldn't exist on YouTube. I would just be a Euro snob, an idiot, doesn't know what he's talking about. I only exist because there are fans that agree with me. And obviously disagree too, but I'm assuming if they follow me, they might agree with me more than they disagree. So, but I still think that it didn't really change my mind too much. I still think soccer is really big in this country, but U.S. men's national team fans, it's not a lot of them. It's still very niched.
Yeah. We don't care that much about the U.S. men's national team or MLS clubs, as you put it. We care about the individual players, but not the clubs themselves. At least I'll speak for myself, right? I was born and raised here, and I cared about the U.S. men's national team back in the 90s, you know, 1990. I remember them making the World Cup, 94. I actually went to the World Cup in 94 here at the Rose Bowl. I saw them play against Colombia. I saw them play against Brazil. I went to some Argentina games, obviously, too. But I kind of cared when I was a kid. And then something happened along the way, Filippo, where, like, I pay attention, but I don't feel connected to them, if that makes sense, right? I don't feel... My soul is not connected to the United States men's national team, to the United States Soccer Federation, or to any MLS team. And so I could give a shit. I guess a question for you too, because you mentioned that people agree with you, otherwise you wouldn't exist and stuff. Do you think that portion of the fan base is growing? Because obviously I'm paying attention to you. I wanted you on the show. Obviously, that for me anyways, that means something. I usually don't get that many guests because I don't want that many guests because I don't respect that many guests. But do you think that portion is growing in the U.S., the more critical fan base, the fan base that does agree more with the tactical managers, you know, that does agree more with the 3-4-3s of the world, that does want to change things drastically and make it look more like how it is everywhere around the world, and not just Europe, because they're like, oh, you're a Euro snob, or you just want it to be. No, it's not just Europe. It's South America, it's Africa, it's Asia, it's Central America. The whole world lives the game differently. So again, do you think that portion is growing here?
What do you think?
I think that there's an asymmetry. I think that however you start off in soccer in this country, you jump to our side, and people who are on our side never jump to the other side. So it's kind of like the more educated, in my opinion, that you get, the more you see through our lens and the more you kind of get it the way that we get it, right or wrong. But once you're kind of like us or people who agree with us, you don't convert to the MLS types.
Yeah. And to your question, are you asking from like the 1990s till now, or you're talking, let's say, post-COVID?
Since you started the channel.
I don't think it's changed much. I think a few, nothing significant. I think what has changed is the U.S. soccer media has always been held hostage by the Federation, by Major League Soccer, by some, whatever you want to call it, right? They've always essentially bowed to whatever they have to say, so they don't lose access, so they're in good terms with whatever owner, with the league, with Don. I'm just naming people, right? Sure, I don't know who it is. And it might be different for each pundit or media member, right? And the thing with journalism and soccer in America, and not trying to take a hit on anyone here, besides the media guys, which would be like former players, because they're there because they're former players, whether you like Alexi or not, he's a former player. So that's one of the reasons he's there. Hurt Gomez, Eric Wynaldo, when he had a job there in media, they are former players. But I'm talking about the journalists. many of them, they like to hear it or not, in the U.S., because it's a small niche. If you're a big-time journalist, you're going to be covering the NFL, the NBA, Major League Baseball. So they're more of like the tier two, tier three journalists. Some of them didn't play soccer when they were younger. They don't understand the game. They don't understand what's going on. They don't understand soccer culture. So there's that. I think what happened was maybe the U.S. men's national team fan base never had people or this portion of the fan base that you're talking about. You're talking about our side. I don't see it as one side or another side. Let's just put it people that share a similar vision to what we have. I don't think they ever had an account with as much of a reach or voice as the media members as now. And I'm talking about, like, literally you go on Twitter and if depending on what I tweet, and it's not just me, 11 Yanks too, and there's other accounts that are loud and they have a big following, so they have a big reach. And they're very critical of the Federation when things come out. You saw when Greg Berhalter was getting fired. That I've never seen with U.S. soccer. So, like, a coach that was so heavily scrutinized, and it got to a point where it was just like straight up, I mean, it was justifiable hate, but it was hate and it was loud and people wanted this guy out. That I had not seen before, till a point that the pressure was so big that even the American Outlaws were like asking for him to get fired. And trust me, if they were asking for him to get fired, they asked for authorization to make that post. They didn't just make it out of own free will. So that is, I think that's a big difference, where these fans didn't really have maybe a loud voice or someone with a following that could essentially say what they're trying to say. So it would be like a random MLS show puts out a tweet or makes a video on YouTube, whatever, and there would be like 5 or 10 accounts that are like complaining, but no one's listening. They don't care. Now it's a bit more complicated, and it's something they definitely don't like, because you're able to maybe, I wouldn't even say shift, but fix the narrative that they try to push, right? There's more pushback on silly narratives, and you see pushback when it comes to the Open Cup saga, and you see pushback when it comes to Greg Berhalter. Because I know people don't agree with this, some of them, and they're going to say it's bullshit. And I don't even know if I'm allowed to curse here, but sometimes I do on my channel, so it'll come out from time to time. I don't know if Greg Berhalter would have been fired if the fans just went completely silent after the Copa America. I think he would have stayed. I think they would have kept him. Because I heard from people inside U.S. soccer, some people there are okay with me, that a lot of the concerns was fan sentiment coming into the 2026 World Cup, sponsors and donors. They were concerned about that. There was too much backlash, and that played a role for sure in the decision. So I don't know, like if the fans just moved on, like maybe 10 years ago, it would have been just like, whatever. I think he might have stayed, for example.
Yeah. Okay. So your answer kind of is that things have progressed.
I think it has. I mean, do you agree? Like the Berhalter saga to me, it's something I'm not that old. So I haven't been, I mean, U.S. soccer as a whole is not that old. If we take into account, if you take the modern era, it started in the 90s when you were describing the World Cup. Have you seen that pressure on a U.S. national team coach? I know it's not like Argentina. I know it's not like Brazil. It's not like Europe. But I've never seen that pressure in a U.S. national team coach.
No, never, man. And I kind of have been trying to educate folks prior to that era of this is how you get the change that you want. The fans have the power. The supporters have the power. Because in my view, and I've worked in the space for a long time, U.S. soccer / MLS really operate significantly based on public perception. They are obsessed with public perception, which is why they're obsessed with controlling the narrative. And they lost the narrative. You know, they couldn't control the desire of the loud voices, and hence the followers of the loud voices, to getting rid of Berhalter. And it got to the point where it was untenable, Filippo. They had to fire him. And part two of that is hiring the foreigner, because they also wanted to get another one of their boys in the job, whether it be Trendelo, whether it be Jim Curtin, whether it be whoever it is, okay? They wanted another one of their MLS boys to get the job. And so hence the delay in my sincere opinion, and also from my, I have my own birdies from within the beast, right? Hence the delay of why it took so long to kind of make progress towards getting Pochettino or whoever it is that they were going to get, which they also delayed like crazy. And I know you're a big BJ fan when BJ had to be the interim guy or whatever. And they
it's
were
a bit of a joke, the BJ thing. But
I get it. But all this stuff, they work based on delay, because the more time passes, the more pacified the voices become, the supporters, and they're not as riled up anymore. So they're hoping people calm down to the point where if they hire their boy again or somebody else, yeah, there'll be a little bit of outrage, but it'll boil over. But they couldn't do it, Filippo. And the same thing, here's other examples. LA Galaxy, the LA Galaxy supporters, when the Galaxy was fucking shit for years and years and years, had enough finally. And what did the ownership end up doing? They cleaned house, get rid of the president, Chris Klein, get rid of coaching, get rid of the technical director. They cleaned everybody out. And that was a supporter-driven sort of initiative. So I think that's what we need in the country. And I think voices like yours are very important in stymieing that. My question to you, though, is because I've seen folks like you, like me, come and go in the sense that they come out the gate punching and then something happens. And they don't punch as hard anymore and they chill out. And next thing you know, they're buddy buddies with the establishment. They're talking to the Matt Doyles of the world. They had their guests on each other's show and stuff like this. That was my concern with you as well. And I think I voiced that at some point. Have you ever been tempted to go down that right route? And I'll start by saying I've been tempted. I've been told directly by the establishment, Gary, it would be best for you if you, did X, Y, or Z, or Gary, it would not be good for you if you continue doing X, Y, or Z. So I understand the pressures that exist, and sometimes it's internal. So I don't know. I let that for you to speak on.
What would I gain from it?
Well, let's talk about what the others gain from it, right? Others gain others gain access, right? They can get on the phone and just. Well, but I'm saying this is what you asked me the question, right? So what do others potentially gain? Others potentially gain access. Access to who? Access to the franchises, access to interview the GMs or the presidents, or get into a press room, and ask the questions to, Pochettino, or get a U.S. men's national team on the podcast and all that sort of stuff. Maybe even get a job one day with the league, or with U.S. soccer. So that's what all these folks are angling for.
Yeah, I've had situations. I won't put names. I'll tell the story in a second, but one, I never want to work for the league. I've worked in the Orlando City Soccer School, and I got better things to do with my life financially and for multiple other reasons as well. So that's doesn't really matter. I don't want to work with MLS or with U.S. Soccer. I have my own projects, and they've been going well. And even if they don't go well, I'll figure something out in life. Life, you just keep figuring stuff out, and that's how things go. But to your point about access, it's an interesting question. When I started the channel, I remember the first player I had on was, I think, Paxton Aronson. He was not very well known at the time. I think I just DM'd him on Instagram and even replied. I'm like, hey, I'd like to interview you. And to myself, I'm like, hey, this is interesting because I get to give a young prospect a platform for people to get to know him. And I'm also getting good content here that people will love. And as soon as I released the video, it didn't do that well. It did worse than a video of me yapping for 10 minutes. Didn't matter. I continued to bring on players and all that. And I started to slowly notice that the player interviews do way worse than a video of me yapping on my own. Mm-hmm. Now, if I bring, for example, a Hercules Gomez or Alexi Lalas, guys that will have more strong opinions, whether it is real, whether it is fake, mainly referring to Alexi, whether people like him, people will watch. But access to players or coaches and any of that, it doesn't matter, because think about it for a second. For example, let's say they gave me access to Greg Berhalter during the whole saga that I was heavily criticizing him on a weekly basis. Do you think the access would not come with restrictions of what I can or cannot ask? And at that point, how would that help me? Like, what am I even allowed to ask him? right? What am I supposed to ask him? His favorite flavor of ice cream? Like, it's just very silly. Or like Alexi asking him how he does the bounce pass. It's like stupid shit like that. It doesn't really matter. So no, but back in 2023, I was invited by Brett Oppenheim. He's a Netflix guy. And he's a great guy, by the way. And he just likes to help out. He likes soccer and he watches the channel. So he was involved with the U.S. Soccer Federation. And because he's a fan of the channel, he wanted to bring us to a game and a few other content creators to reward and all of that. And Brett, I can assure you, he definitely had good intentions with this. I'm not sure everyone in U.S. Soccer did, but Brett definitely did. So they actually did pay for the flight and they even paid for the hotel. Full disclosure right there. They flew us in. It wasn't just me. There were other creators. I did a whole video about that. There's a whole vlog. And when we were there, a guy that works for U.S. Soccer, I don't know if he still does. I'm not going to mention any names or anything, at least not publicly. And there's no reason to do that. He kind of came to us, to me and Pete, actually, from 11 Yanks, kind of trying to go along the lines. I'm paraphrasing, and I don't remember the exact words, more or less of like, hey, can get you more access, get you to more games, get you jersey. If I mean, but the way you covered that Gio Berhalter saga, you know, it shouldn't really be that way. And sometimes you can't really go over the top. And it even became something a little inconvenient at the time where I even asked him, like, can you be specific of where did I go over the top? Right? Was there some time that, like, I mean, our coach kind of went over the top with his wife, but you guys are okay with that. But I mean, you have a problem with how I read the news. That's a bit of a problem. So that was one situation. Now, with MLS specifically, never had anything. And I've had access with MLS. Like, for example, the Charlotte game up in North Carolina, their first game against the Galaxy at home, 78,000 people. They gave me full access and I made a vlog about that. And honestly, I made those vlogs mainly to try to help MLS because I lose money making those vlogs. I literally lose money. The YouTube money does not cover the flights, hotel. I don't make $1,000 on a YouTube video. So, yeah. And I mean, put it on paper. How much does it cost for a flight? Two nights in a hotel, food there. It adds up in the US. Things ain't cheap here. I did a vlog with Austin FC too in the game. I mainly did those with the goal of like, hey, let me actually promote this experience and maybe we'll get more people in the stadium. I did not get paid by any MLS team. All they gave me was access. And honestly, what I found out eventually is that it's just not worth it. It's just not worth my time. It's not worth the money. I don't think the league wants to grow the way I think they should grow. That's mm-hmm. the problem, right? Yeah. So I was just like, it's whatever. I still follow MLS because I track mainly American prospects. But outside of that, I've grown to not really enjoy the league that much. I used to see it as like a hobby that me and my dad would watch games together. That was about it. Like when we moved to Orlando, Orlando City would play. It was on TV back in the day when they weren't on Apple in 2016, 17, before COVID and even the early COVID. It would be something that me and my dad would just sit down and watch the game. But we wouldn't really care about the results. We would literally watch it as MLS fans do, which is like, it doesn't matter if you win, if you lose. It's just about like spending some time watching some soccer. That's what we would do. Same thing when we were in New York. And my dad doesn't watch MLS at all these days, at all. And I know he was a casual in terms of following the league. He wouldn't watch many games. But he used to watch every single Orlando City game on TV. Doesn't watch any game at all these days.
What
doesn't
changed?
Apple.
Oh, okay.
It was free on TV, so he would always put it on. And they're like, oh, so he's not, well, they're going to say, oh, so he's not a diehard fan. He has like 7 or 6 Orlando City jerseys. He used to watch every game, and then occasionally he would attend 2 to 3 games per season. I'm sorry, that's not a fan you want to lose. So, especially a league like MLS. A fan that watches every game, goes to 2 to 3 games a season and always buys a jersey, I would not want to lose a fan like that. Yeah, he's not like the crazy diehard that's their season ticket holder. But anyhow, just one of many examples. But those were my experiences with it. I don't see how they can make me tempted to going towards that. That's the thing. I just don't see it. Unless they come to me. And also, I wouldn't want to get paid to say something for someone. I mean, if they want to go to me and say, hey, here's $5 million to shut the fuck up. It's like, okay, I'll shut up. I'll do that. That sounds like a good offer, right? If I come to you, hey, want $5 million just to shut up? Wouldn't you shut up? Like, yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. Do whatever you want, guys.
Yeah.
But none. I don't know. It doesn't sound enjoyable or like right to get paid to say or push a narrative you don't really believe in. Right. Yeah. If you believe it, fine. And you get paid to push a narrative you believe in, that's fine. But I don't really match with them. And I know you don't either. And I know a good portion of the fan base doesn't. Right. I'm very interested in seeing what those Apple TV numbers are. They won't release it, but I am very curious.
Yeah. Well, if they were good, they would release it, right?
Of course. Don Garber would tattoo it to his forehead. Right? He put out all the Messi numbers in social media because obviously Messi and social media will do well. But how many people are actually paying for that sign-up? I heard there were games last season, reliable source. I don't have the actual numbers. I heard there were MLS games that were getting less than 10,000 views.
Yeah.
And that's less than my YouTube channel.
Yeah.
And I'm not under a $1 billion contract with any company. So it's pretty bad. I mean, I can see a few teams. I mean, you can probably name a few that you would believe that would be below 10K.
For sure. For sure. Well, fortunately for them, their business model doesn't depend on that stuff. It doesn't really matter. Did you go to college, Filippo?
I did go to college.
Did you finish?
Yeah, I have a mechanical engineering degree. I just don't work with it.
No kidding. Rather, wow. Okay.
Did you?
Yeah. I got degrees in physics and math. So I'm sure you had to take physics when you were doing your engineering.
A lot of it. Too much.
Cool, man. Well, no, I also asked because you're a very good communicator, dude. So I'm like, does this guy have like a communications degree or something related to this? But nah.
I think someone asked me about that too. No, I never had it. I think that one thing that happened in my life is I moved around a lot, right? São Paulo, near San Francisco, then Rio, then New York, then Florida. And a lot of that was as like kid, teenager. So when you move around, you don't have a lot of friends. And what happened very often was I was always with adults very often. Mm-hmm. And I think that just kind of like, I think that's the reason because I never had any classes of anything. Even when I was in college, it was mainly engineering, a lot of them are very nerdy. A lot of my friends, very nerdy people in engineering. So I think it was just that moving around a lot. That's why a lot of the places I lived, I don't really have many friends. I have friends in New York because that was high school. I have a few in Rio, not many, and then college friends. And that's about it. That might have been the reason.
Was it your dad's job or something that had you moving?
My dad was in the Brazilian Navy. So he was sent to California when I was very young. So I learned how to write in English before even Portuguese. My Portuguese is actually speaking. It's good. Writing, it's terrible. I studied also more in the United States. So he moved to California for a while with that, then back to Brazil. Then eventually he got hired by a company in New York to come back. That was after this time in the Navy because he had a degree here and I don't know exactly why, but he got hired to work. That's why he moved to New York and end up staying. So that's why we moved a lot.
Got it. I'm sure you played.
Yeah.
Did you play in Brazil too or no?
Well, in Brazil, it's funny. I never really played field or organized soccer until I moved to the US. In Brazil, it was always the beach, streets. I played a lot at the Gávea, which is where Flamengo is. Their headquarters in Gávea. In Rio, and then when I moved to the U.S., obviously played in high school because at the time you could play DA, you could play in the academy and play in high school, and then I played a little bit at the time. There was like the Cosmos Academy, which was nearby. They trained by the airport, I think, more towards New York City. So I trained there for a bit. Then Albertson Academy, which was actually really good at the time, and then I just kind of trained also with, there was a friend of mine that had his own team there near Jericho in New York, and I trained there. And then I even went to Buffalo to play NCAA. They were D1, actually. I think they ended the program now. I don't think they have it anymore. But when I went there, they had an interim coach. They shifted. It was different, and I was not a big guy. And in U.S. soccer, apparently, you need to be big to play, especially if you keep going back, you have to be bigger. They wanted me to, like, redshirt. Then ended up one thing led to another, left, and Then I also did engineering. I don't know how much I'll be able to handle engineering and soccer. And then I just started playing soccer for fun. And then when I moved here to Florida, I ended up playing a little bit of like UPSL, which is amateur. I know some guys get paid to play in it, but it is amateur. I would say it's like a competitive amateur league, but I had 3 knee surgeries after college.
Jesus.
So I haven't really played outside of pickup in quite some time. Even when I had the TST team, I was like, should I try to get in shape and play? But every time if I intensify practice, my knee just doesn't feel good.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about the TST team, actually. I didn't follow it that closely. One, how did it do? 2, why did you start it? Were you the coach? Because I think you were on the field also, if I'm not mistaken. And then lastly, what do you think about this, you know, latest news that, you know, they're partnering up with U.S. Soccer?
That's a lot of questions, man.
So
one, the TST is a very fun event because it's an amateur soccer tournament, but there's $1 million on the line, so it's not really amateur. You see the level of players that go there. It's definitely not an amateur level. So it's actually interesting. I was talking to Jeff Cameron last year.
Okay.
Because he plays for CONCACAF, which is Pat McAfee's team. He even gave me his jersey. I have his jersey here in the back. And I told him I wanted to go to TST. So he was trying to find a way to maybe even get me in their staff or roster so I could be with them. But 2 things happened. 1, he wasn't able to because they were pretty much set with budget and the team. And 2, I wasn't able to go anyway because I can't remember. I had something going on at the time that I couldn't go to the TST. So that happened. Then I remember I joked with Jeff about like, what if I just had my own team, the tactical manager team. It was more of a joke. And he didn't see it as a joke, so he just connected me directly with the tournament. And I got a hold of them, and I talked to the tournament. They wanted me there because of social media, but there was still a big fee to pay to get in. There's a big fee. That's one of the that's how they make money. It's the fee along with ticket sales, and I get it. That's part of the tournament. So at the time, I kind of didn't really think it was possible, and I just moved on because it was too much money, along with the fact that you have to pay for the expenses of the players and get them there. But then I was in Brazil with a friend of mine, and he wanted to help the channel. He was just like, hey, I want to invest in the channel. I was like, dude, there's nothing you can invest on YouTube.
Yeah.
Like, what are you going to do? Change the background? Better mic? What are you going to put, $1,000? What is that going to help?
Yeah.
So then I just said a joke. It's like, hey, got this tournament here, and it's a lot of money, but there's $1 million as a reward. If you don't care, we can give it a shot. And he cares about money, but he's also does very well in life. So it's not like that money it's something he's willing to lose. And he's just like, we're in. And I didn't know if he was serious or not, but obviously he was because we got it, right? So we got in the TST. That's what it was. It wasn't anything that was like, oh, I really need to be here. I really want to plan it. I just wanted to be part of the event because I thought it was a fun event. And so then building the team was tough. I had a few big names in it, like Leandro Damião that played for Brazilian national team, played for us. The tournament itself, we lost the first game to a team that had a lot of Premier League guys, like Stephen Ireland was there, Tom Huddleston. We lost them 4-3. So I built a good enough team to compete with them. The second game, we defeated a USL League 2 side, which was Tobacco Road, a local team. And then in the last game, we lost to Hashtag United, which is they're a YouTube team, but they also play, they have players from like the Ballers League. They have a good team. They have a good team. We lost. So we ended up losing in the group stage there in the first year. It's one of those that was a good learning experience. We have to do better. We should have done better. And at the end of the day, unlike a lot of the American coaches, if I selected the guys to be there, it's my fault. I selected them to be there. And there were a few guys that were very problematic. Usually not the former pros. Like Leandro, for example, he would be a guy that could come in as a superstar. But no, he was super nice, humble. But a lot of the guys thought of themselves too much. I had a guy that couldn't make it because he couldn't get in the country. That was another problem. I had guys that just didn't go for whatever reason. One of my center backs tore his ACL the 2 weeks before. So there were a few issues that we're addressing for next year, but we're going to be back. We're going to be back next year. And the goal now is the goal is to build a team to try to compete, but it's a $1 million tournament. So there's no scrub. Well, there's bad teams, but when people talk about it, I mean, the reward is higher than the US Open Cup.
Totally.
So people that think that when they say it's like, oh, it's an amateur term, it's like, guys, no tournament with $1 million on the line is an amateur tournament.
Totally. How did you get the players? Did you already have like a laundry list of players that you had in mind and you went and you cold called every one of them? Was it a network sort of thing?
Well, I distanced myself from the Brazilian community a while back here in Orlando, mainly because some people that are not very good. So it's like, I want to keep some distance. I don't need to deal with this. But then to do that, I went back and I know a lot of people in Brazilian soccer and a lot of people here. I told you I worked with some players that played in Brazil professionally. So what I tried to do was I was like, hey, I want to build a team. I want to try to get the best possible local players. And Orlando is a very hot hub right now for former Brazilian players and guys that move here from Brazil. So I got some of those, and one thing led to another. A lot of these guys know guys. So like a guy in my team was friends with Leandro, for example. And then he called him, was like, Leandro, he had just retired. Want to come for the tournament? And he's a guy that's competitive. He's like, yeah, I'd love to play. So it was more like that, just kind of like working our way with that. But I'm considering a different approach for next year. I need to know the guys a bit better before going, because I'd rather get spanked on the field than lose because I had issues off the field. And
right,
the team that I had, if you go back to even the first game, we outplayed the Premier League guys. I had guys that were good enough to play. Those things that were happening off the field that, and the problem with this is people are going to say, see how it's hard to manage egos. Of course it's hard to manage egos, even especially at a professional level. The problem is at the professional level, you have some leverage. These guys are tied to a contract. What leverage do I have?
Yeah.
Not paying the guys. What am I going to do? Send them home? And yeah. Also, I already had a roster of 14 guys. I can't send anyone home. So these little things that you have to learn, it's a different tournament to play, unlimited substitutions. It's 7v7. It's not 11v11. There are different rules. There are things that we'll see. Now I'm just talking. I'm just yapping. I could go there next year and just mess things up again. We'll see how it goes next year. But it's a tournament also that I would recommend you going. You would love it.
As a spectator or what?
I think either one. As a spectator, it's enjoyable to watch. The teams take it very seriously. It's intense. It's physical. And it's 7v7. There's a lot of goals. But even coaching, it's something that you can find a team or something that can be heavily involved. It's very intense because you don't have, like, you coach, so you know how it is. Also, the full Brian, too, your brother, you guys know how it is. Like, the full 90 minutes, there are moments in the game where you can sit down as a coach, relax, think. You don't have time there. It's, like, very, very instinctive, on-the-spot gut feeling. You can plan for a few things, but it's rotate, 20 minutes, and then you have the target score after that. It's very intense, the 45 to 50 minutes of game. Sometimes it can hit an hour. I think you would enjoy it.
No, I've had little stints coaching 3v3 and 5v5 in these indoor facilities here. And sometimes they are like tournaments with a little bit of a cash prize at the very end. And you pick your guys, your team is good. You have to be on as a coach at all times. At all times. There is no time to rest. And so the adrenaline is on all the time too. So for sure. Well, how much is the entry fee, dude? Is it published online?
I don't know. I don't know even if I can. I mean, people probably know just from talking, but it's tens of thousands.
Okay. Is it something they want to keep on the down low? They don't want it broadcasted?
I don't know because I heard even it's going up for some teams. I don't know. I don't know if I signed anything saying I can't disclose the actual amount. Because the thing is, I knew what other teams paid beforehand. So teams talk. I don't know how much they care, but it's just so I don't get in trouble in case it is.
Got it. That's kind of what I figured. Tens of thousands of bucks for sure. And lastly, okay, the U.S. soccer connection. So I have my own conspiracy theories, and you know how conspiracy theories are usually correct. Yeah. But yeah, what do you think about that whole development?
Oh, the post that they made?
Well, aren't they going to partner up somehow?
With US soccer? TST, yeah. It's funny. I was talking to the guy that's even the investor in the team, and he's in Brazil. So he was just like, wow, this is so cool. The federation's partnering. This is legitimizing the tournament even more. And I told him, you are right. From a marketing perspective, it does seem to it probably will have some short-term benefits, I think, I would say. Maybe they move it to Atlanta, for example, when they have that shiny new training facility that MLS essentially paid for.
Mm-hmm.
So there could be some short-term benefits for the TST, but I told them ultimately what I think will happen over the long term is this is the beginning of the end for it. That's what I think. Totally. I think short-term, you might see a bit of an explosion of it, right? They'll get maybe some former U.S. players. They'll get more attention. I think that's what I told them. I said next year will probably be the biggest one. And maybe 2027 as well. But then I said maybe even the next 3 to 4 editions, we'll see like a bit of a bump or maybe stagnate. Then I think they will run into issues with U.S. soccer because it is all about money for sure. Like it's not like they're running a charity right now without U.S. soccer. I just don't know. What has U.S. soccer done right with soccer in this country so far? What have they touched that is like, oh boy, they really changed that for the best? What have they done? I don't know. I just don't know what they can do over the long term. They can't take care of their own business. They're just going to overcharge. It's going to become much more exclusive than it already is, which it kind of is at this point. I would hope it would become more affordable for fans, even though tickets are not super pricey. You can get tickets for like $35 for the whole morning, the whole afternoon, which is not too bad. They have family packages. But I think with U.S. soccer, what's going to happen is the tickets will go up eventually. It would become, I think the vibe there is not corporate. It's very family friendly and competitive. I think it'll become very corporate as time goes on. And they already talked about trying to make it like almost like a league where teams will qualify in different regions. And it's like, that's not the point. This is what you should be doing with MLS, different divisions, promotion. This is a festival. It's meant to be like a 1 week event where we go there, we have fun and we compete also, but what are we doing here? That's not what it's about. It's a festival. So it's just, I don't think the people running U.S. soccer, I don't think they're stupid. I just think they don't get it when it comes to soccer culture. That's what I think they don't get it. They're definitely not stupid. I met JT Batson briefly once in person, and I've heard him talk. That guy's not stupid. Like, he's far from stupid. I just don't think he gets it with soccer. I think anyone that says, oh, they're just stupid, you're being nice to them for saying that because you're taking away any blame for what they do. You're essentially saying they're stupid, so they get it wrong. No, JT Batson is not stupid.
None of them are stupid, Filippo.
No.
None of them. At the franchise level, the presidents are not stupid. Technical directors, not stupid. General managers, not stupid. These are some of the most intelligent people there are around. They know exactly what is going on and what they are doing. It's
even
just,
Ron Garber. Like, people love to shit on him. Smart as hell.
Filippo, these guys, and I've engaged with all of them, okay? These guys are smooth operators, okay? They are fucking smart. Period. End of story.
Yeah.
It's just the incentives are different than what the fan base and the supporters and us soccer people want the incentives to be. They are not incentivized to make it a festival. They're not incentivized to make it what we, you know, an open system. They're not incentivized to make it about what is best for sporting excellence. That's it. And so they apply their massive brain power to the other side of the equation, which is number one, Filippo, is consolidation of power. It's not about money. People get that wrong too. It's not ultimately about money. It's about power, controlling the whole freaking thing. So from my perspective, the TST thing, I think you're 100% right. The first year, two or three, massive bump, huge popularity, all that stuff. And then somehow they will take it over. It will become theirs.
Well, you're right, because what happened to TST is they're seeing that it's growing very fast.
Yes.
Right? People are starting to talk about it and they're seeing it. It's growing.
It's competition.
So let's get in now, because maybe 5 years from now, it'll be so big that it'll be very complicated for us to get involved. But if we take it over now, we start to mold it our own way. We don't let this league or festival grow apart from us. Let's keep
it out of control. Cool.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing with the TST, because I mean they could end up making a league.
Yeah, no, 100%.
I mean, there's many ideas of how the TST can grow without U.S. soccer, but I can understand why from their end it's kind of tempting when the federation of the country you're at comes knocking on the door. You're like, hey, it seems like a massive opportunity. Why would we not take it? Right. But again, I think if they're trying to cash out, they'll be fine. If that's the goal for the TST, they'll be able to cash out and they'll cash out good. Now, if their idea was, I want to make this huge, I want to take over the country with this, it's not going to happen with U.S. soccer. They're going to suppress you. But yeah, it's funny because you mentioned that with U.S. soccer, and I thought about it to myself, and me and Pete talk about this. Sometimes it feels like they don't even want soccer to grow too much in this country because they'll lose control. So they want it to be right at that perfect spot where they can have control. It's big enough that there's power and money too. I think money might not be the priority, but it definitely matters to them right there. So they want it to be right there. They don't want it to grow too much. It's right where they want it.
Controlled growth. And they've said it in the past. 10, 15, 20 years ago, Garber, that used to be one of their idioms, is controlled growth instead of just opening the floodgates. They might end up doing what they did with the U.S. Soccer Development Academy, which started in 2007. It was run by U.S. Soccer, and then the pandemic hit. And you know what they say, never let a good crisis go to waste, right? So U.S. Mm-hmm. Soccer just threw up its hands and said, uh-oh, you know, we can't run it because it's too costly. You know, it's a big line item in our budget. Nonsense. It's like $3 million. I don't even know, but it's nothing crazy, okay? MLS is going to take it over. And so they gave the whole thing to MLS. That was the birth of MLS Next. It was the U.S. soccer, and now MLS is in charge. So with TST, I see the same thing. In 3 years, it'll be a U.S. soccer thing because maybe the TST guys will cash out or whatever. And then after a period of time, they'll just hand it over to MLS for whatever excuse that they want. They'll be like, oh, yeah, it's too costly. We have budget issues or whatever. MLS, you take this thing over. This is it's a classic playbook. And full circle back to the beginning of our conversation where I'm like, oh, I hope Filippo doesn't get enticed to join the Borg, right? To join the machine. It's a classic playbook. They'll do it. They're doing it with the TST guys, right? It's like, oh, come be part of the machine. You know, you'll benefit in X, Y, and Z ways. And TST is like, oh yeah, that makes sense. Okay. I guess we'll go be part of the machine. So that's what they do. They give you the carrot.
Yeah. We'll see also for how long I want to cover soccer in this country too. There's that at some point.
Yeah. Do you have other plans? Do you want to go back into engineering or something or no?
No, definitely not engineering. I would like to stay involved with soccer. It's just a matter of like how much longer I want to keep like taking shit from people online for like nonsense cause that just won't change with the way they are. Right. I mean, like I said this many times, I've committed to the fan base that I will cover this team until the end of the 2026 World Cup. And then after that, I'll reevaluate. I don't need this to make a living. There's many more things enjoyable in life that you can do. I enjoy covering the national team. I don't enjoy some of the things surrounding it, right? Yeah. And I'd like to see some change. I don't really see it changing. I know this may sound very pessimistic, but I think it is the reality. I don't think it's changing. We talked about the fan base being loud in certain things, but the thing about Greg Berhalter and hiring a coach is what you said. It was just about calm everyone down. We hired Pochettino because with Pochettino, it can go either way. You do well in the World Cup. He leaves after regardless to go back to Europe. And then they can just hire whoever because everyone's happy. So they can hire whoever. And the other way it can go is, let's say the World Cup doesn't go well. And then we need an American. Pochettino, foreigner, good coach, but it doesn't work. We need an American. So is the perfect hire for their narrative.
Yeah.
Because they can spin it whatever way they want. Pochettino leaves, they can hire whoever they want because they got it right. So now they have credit. It fails. He's the reason we failed. Look at all this talent, the golden generation. He failed. We gotta get back to our roots. We gotta bring back Bruce Arena right now or something like that. Definitely not Bruce, but they'll get, like you said, Chirandolo, Jim Curtin, whatever they want to do. So I'm not seeing this change. And I think there's still I don't believe in the I tweeted this out yesterday. I don't believe in the MLS quota. I don't think the coach of the national team is told, you got to bring 12 MLS players in the roster. You got to do this. I don't think he's told. I don't think that's how things even work in real life. There's no, when we talk about even conspiracies in general, there's nothing written and it's not something demanded. It's usually via influence.
It's incentives. Right?
incentives, influence, pressure. You as an employee there, you want to be on the good side of the boss. You want to be on the good side of that owner that donated $50 million for a training center. So it's little things like that. And I mean, I don't want to get into conspiracies about this, but just talking about Ajiman, for example, right now, you watch that guy in many countries in the world, he wouldn't become a professional player just because of the level, right? And people are going to say, but that just shows that the U.S. is a land of opportunity. It's like, no, it's not the point here. Like, he wouldn't be because he's not good enough. He could get all the opportunity in the world. He wouldn't become, just not good enough. But ironically, they were promoting the living crap out of him. They were putting him in the national team. Don Garber selected a guy with what? He had like 5 or 6 goals in MLS to be in the all-star team. They were propping him up as much as they could. And surprise, surprise, they got a $10 million sale and watch him disappear now. Like, no one's going to, they're not going to talk about him for the national team. It's like, wait a second. Now that he got the move, which is not even a big move, it's freaking Derby County. It's not a team known for being a powerhouse or great scouting. It will go down. Like, they're not going to talk about him as much, right? Brandon Vasquez at some point was heavily promoted until he went to Liga MX. It seems like after they sell, Duncan Maguire was being heavily promoted for a while because they were trying to get the Blackburn deal. That didn't work out for whatever reason. And then Duncan Maguire sucks now. No one talks about him. They took him to the Olympics. Yeah. Right? So I'm not implying anything, but anyone listening to this, you guys are smart. Think for yourselves. What's going on here? And this is not to say this doesn't happen with other countries. It does in a different way. It's not really the league with the federation. It's usually agents. And I remember one from Brazil that comes to mind. Like, there's this player called Afonso Alves that used to play in the Eredivisie. He was scoring a lot in the Eredivisie, but Eredivisie is one level. Premier League is a different beast. And I remember that they were promoting him heavily in Brazil. He was getting called up for the national team, and then they sold him to Middlesbrough. At the time, Middlesbrough was in the Prem. After that, they never called him up again. And I know a player that played for Corinthians. I know him, and I've talked to him, and he knows for a fact that he didn't get called in for the national team. I'm not going to mention the years, names, because another agent paid the coach at the time to call him up because there's a clause in the contract that he'd make $300,000 if he was called up. $100,000 goes to the coach. So that happens in other countries in different ways. The difference here is that it's the league with the federation, right? It's not really like, and also in other countries, it's chaotic. It's not like one group. It's just over the place.
Correct.
It's like agents here, and then you'll have like coaches there and a faction here and politics here and a club here and the federation there. It's very chaotic. So they fight each other. So it kind of ends up balancing out. And they take each other down and things work out eventually.
Yes.
Here, they control everything. So there's no one, there's no checks and balances.
Yes. Yes.
There's none.
No, totally. There was a scandal. I don't know how long ago, maybe within about 10 years ago in Uruguay. So Uruguay's most powerful agent, if my memory serves me, is Daniel Fonseca. And the entire public there was like, the whole Uruguayan national team is a scam. It's just whoever this agent wants on the national team gets on the national team. Period. End of story. But you're right. The power is distributed elsewhere, Filippo. And so you have different power centers all battling it out with one another. So it works out in the end. I wanted to ask you, since you see all of this here in the States, and you're like, it'll never change, you know, and you have this sort of cynical view of it all, because I kind of feel like we can make it change. And that's why I keep fighting. But if you see that you can't, nothing will ever change, why do you even do it? Why even care? Why even talk about Gio Reyna and get excited about the U.S. men's national team and who should be on it, who shouldn't be on it, and Ajiman and all this sort of stuff? Like, if I thought that nothing could ever change, I'd be like, fuck this. I'm going to go find something else to do.
Well, two things. One, the U.S. national team was the only time in the U.S. where I could actually find people to watch soccer with me. So that's
okay.
One. You've grown attached to the team. Brazil, it's very easy to find people to watch the national team. And even, honestly, it was easier even in New York to find Brazilians to watch Brazil national team games than Americans to watch any soccer game. But U.S. national team World Cup, even in high school, like in 2014, sorry, not high school, 2014, I was in college. Even in college 2014, people will talk about it, right? We're going into the summer. People talk, oh, the World Cup's coming up. So it's a little bit different with that. And when I started the YouTube channel, I still had faith that it can change. And I mean, I'm not saying it's not going to. It can happen, right? I can't predict the future entirely. But it would literally take almost like an entire collapse of MLS for it to change. It would have to reach a point where MLS has no option. It's just completely destroyed and it has to open up. Because again, like people, this is what I tell people all the time. MLS is fine the way it is. Mm-hmm. And they should be. MLS, Don Garber, I actually don't criticize him anymore these days because I understand him now. He works for MLS and he has to do whatever he thinks is best for MLS, for the owners. That's what he has to do. And honestly, he's done a fine job with that for the most part. The federation is the government of U.S. soccer. So they regulate that and say, you can't do this. You can't do that. You can't leave the Open Cup. You need an open pyramid where clubs can come out of the state, region, Division III, Division II, Division I. That's how it's going to work. Figure it out. Maybe you can have your league, but then you got to give me two to whatever way it is. They don't do that. And MLS can still do whatever they want. Like the Open Cup saga, if there was no pushback from the fans, MLS would have just pulled out completely. I don't care.
It wasn't hard enough pushback because they kind of, MLS got half of what it wanted at least.
Yeah, they probably got most of what they wanted because some clubs are fine playing. Some teams are fine. And the like that in any country, it can't happen.
Yes.
Like in Brazil, a lot of clubs, Abel Ferreira is always complaining about the state championship. Always, because Palmeiras starts the season with 20 games under their belt just because of a preseason tournament. 20 games. That's like half the season for some teams in Europe. And they say, it doesn't matter. You're going to play. You're going to like it. And you're going to play with your A team. So they usually start off the U20s because the players are on vacation. But as soon as the vacation's done, they have to be there. They have to play. And they're playing on shit fields. They're playing against teams from the third, fourth division, teams with stadiums worse than high school stadiums, and they don't complain. They go there, they play. They have to do it. While here, they just kind of got away with it. And that's not even a state tournament. It's the freaking like domestic cup.
Right, right.
Or FA Cup. I don't understand it. And the thing is, to your point, like for U.S. soccer to really reach its potential, you need to build community-built clubs, not franchises that grow out of thin air. You're not going to win fans that come from other countries, different cultures with that. They don't take it seriously. It's just not going to happen, right? So what needs to happen would be we would have to, because we're such a big country, we would have to copy a few things of Brazil's structure. We can't do Europe when one European country is the size of like Texas. It just won't work. But what we should have is state tournaments, which that would be for the big clubs to play, the big teams, and the very small ones, which reduces travel. You win that, you have the regionals, you qualify for the regionals. Obviously, the regionals, only the smaller clubs will play because through the regionals, you qualify to the fourth or third division. The top clubs are already playing in the first division later on, and you go like that. So you reduce the cost for the little guys. The big guys, doesn't matter, and they'll play. You build local rivalries, storylines. And I mean, sometimes you'll find a small investor, which by small investor, I say a guy that wants to maybe put in 20 million and he wants to start a little local academy and he'll register for the state tournament and play there. And maybe that'll develop talent. He can move up the ranks and then he'll find another investor that'll put, hey, I like what you're doing. I'll put 50 million here, which people are going to say, that's a lot of money. Yeah. But MLS, you need like $1 billion these days. I'm going to say, no, the franchise fee is 500 million. Yeah. But you need a stadium. You need this. It's like $1 billion. Yeah. Like, it's not a small investor. It's a handful of people that can just invest in that. So will that happen one day? It can, but it requires a complete collapse of MLS. Do you see that happening in the near future? I don't see it.
Well, I think we just need a more vocal, stronger, more educated public, which reaches critical mass. Because I know it's different scale of problem, Filippo, so I'm aware of that, but once we reach critical mass of a particular segment of the supporter base, that is what got Greg Berhalter fired. Mm-hmm. And once there was a critical mass of LA Galaxy supporters who said, fuck you, that is what got the president, the GM, the technical director fired, right? And a whole cleaning up of house. So the principle still applies, right? And that's how everything happens outside of soccer too. You need a critical mass of the common people to say, fuck you, right? And eventually, whatever it is that they're saying fuck you to collapses. So it's a big mountain to climb. I'm not saying it's easy. I just still have hope for us. Otherwise, what am I doing? I'm wasting my life here.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see. Like right now, my main hope is that we do well in the World Cup. And like you said, why? Why? Well, that's just because I'm a fan of the national team. That's
why? Why? Why are you a fan? That's what I don't get.
Well, it's like I told you. I mean, I have teenage years and even childhood because in 1998, I remember also as a kid, my dad, we followed Brazil in the U.S., right? Because we were in California. So I have some memory of that. I even have a 1998 jersey for my dad. And even, like I said, the U.S. national team is probably the only time that I could really watch soccer games with people because that and like Premier League, but Premier League games early in the morning. But even like high school friends, even college, the U.S. national team is the only time that it seemed like some of them cared about U.S. soccer because MLS, there was no community, no culture there. So that's just something I grew up a portion of my life with. And I used to like the U.S. national team the way they were 2010, 2014. Because I had my Brazilian side, which was, oh, we're the dominant ones and we have to win and the pressure's to win. And then you had the American side, which was like, we're the underdogs. We're here to upset someone. And then they upset Spain. Yeah. Right? And then we upset England in the World Cup. The draw was an upset, right?
Yeah.
And then we come into the 2014 World Cup and we're out. Like, how are we going to go through? Germany, Portugal, prime Ronaldo, Ghana's a good team. And that team got out of the group. And I was in Brazil when we played Belgium. I keep telling everyone this story. I was in Teresópolis, actually, near Rio de Janeiro, which is where the Brazilian national team practices. A friend of mine has a home there. And he's like, hey, let's go there to go watch Brazil practice. And I was like, mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And then we went to like this bar just to watch the U.S. play Belgium. That was near the knockout. I can't remember if Brazil had already played Chile or it was after the Chile game. Mm-hmm. But I was in the bar and that game against Belgium, the more Belgium destroyed the U.S. completely on the field, the more the Brazilians would root for the U.S., which was weird. They wanted Belgium to lose. Well, because they were title contenders at the time. It was part of their golden generation, but just kind of like they started getting excited. Yeah, they're just like, this is the underdog. It's like, it's the U.S. They suck, and they're putting up a fight. Like,
right.
I mean, we were getting dominated, but it was just 2-1 on extra time. Like, the U.S. was in it.
Yeah.
Could have won that game. So I think that's probably where I've grown attached. I'm not going to lie to you, and I've said this on the channel. I was super excited for this generation in 2020, 2021. It looked promising the way things were going, but it's weird. This is definitely the U.S. generation I like the least. It's weird because the 2017 one that missed the World Cup, they just sucked. It's like old, washed players. Pulisic was too young, even though he was probably the best player already of that team. Bruce Arena in charge. They had fired Jurgen. So I didn't hate it. I was just saying, like, it's weird that we didn't qualify, but they suck. Like, they literally suck. So, I was just like, whatever. I was like, they just suck. It wasn't fun, but yeah, whatever. Now, this generation, there was a lot of hope. And they're entitled. Some of them are pricks.
Yeah.
Like, I was talking, I have a friend here that played, again, I'm not name dropping, so I'm not putting names. I also don't want to put their names out for their opinions or things we talk in private. Played in the Premier League, played for a European national team. And he doesn't follow the U.S. national team too much, but then he was like talking about the Gold Cup and he was like, oh, I watched the game there. There was Christian Pulisic. And I was just like, oh, he decided to take the summer off to rest. And then he's like, oh, so he's injured, right? He's trying to recover for the season. He's like, no. He took it off because he wants to be in preseason with Milan. He's actually in preseason right now. He's like, what do you mean? I was like, no. He literally told Pochettino that he would be there for the friendlies, but not the Gold Cup. He's like, he turned down a national team call-up in a competitive tournament to be in preseason with what? He couldn't wrap his head around that. And I kept telling him, like, yeah, dude, I can't wrap my head around it either, but I'm telling you how it is. That's literally what it is. At first, when the reports came out, I thought Pulisic was injured. I thought, oh, he's definitely injured and And they're just like, dude, take it easy. You've got the World Cup coming up. But clearly he wasn't out of his mouth. And Pochettino, they both confirmed it. So it's like he chose to do so. And this guy that played years in a very tough environment with a career better than Pulisic, honestly, he couldn't understand it. He couldn't understand.
No, man, it's crazy, dude. It's crazy. And in Argentina, you're just dead if you do something like that or try to do something like that. That's it. You're done. You're replaced. I kind of feel like this guy, like Pulisic, he's untouchable. We have made him untouchable.
Well, it's the entitlement Landon had at some point, and Jurgen challenged it.
Yeah.
It's very similar, right? It's weird because even being untouchable, Neymar, for a long period of time, was definitely untouchable for Brazil. Right now, I'm not so sure, but Neymar from 2011, since he made that debut against the United States, right, scored against the U.S., until the 2022 World Cup, Neymar was untouchable. Yeah. But you still saw him fight PSG, or was it Barcelona or PSG, in 2016? Because he's like, I am playing the Olympics in Brazil.
Yeah.
Find me, do whatever you want. I'm going. Like, the Olympics. Which, by the way, there were a lot of players from the senior team that were invited to play in the Olympics for the U.S. The Tokyo.
And they said no?
They said no, a lot of them.
Jesus Christ.
I heard that from many different sources. So, and you're like, so you have Neymar, a player that has accomplished pretty much everything besides win the World Cup, wanting to go to play a U23 tournament as a professional player in Brazil to win it and fighting to be there. And then Pulisic's like, nah, the Gold Cup. And the thing that people don't realize too, Pulisic, it's like, they're like, oh, he needs this. Sure, he needs vacation, needs to rest. I agree with that. But understand, he is the best player of this generation. He's the face of this generation. He was given this reputation. He is a great player. He's the captain of the team. We're coming off a group stage exit in the Copa America. We're coming off a semifinal loss in Nations League. It was the Gold Cup for him to come, lead this team to win a trophy, and bring the fans back. It's like, hey, believe in us. I know it's just the Gold Cup, but we got the World Cup coming up. We're back. Instead, we got destroyed by Mexico, destroyed by... It was 2-1, but let's be real. Mexico had complete control of that game. If we didn't score an early goal, it would have been 3-0.
Yep.
We scored an early goal. Destroyed by Switzerland, destroyed by Turkey, and we beat a bunch of crap teams. No offense to the teams. They were bad teams. And then the fans are just kind of like, they still think that we're coming into a World Cup at home with the alleged golden generation, and there are fans that think we would get grouped. That's how bad it is right now.
It's an expanded World Cup, dude. So we're going to be playing against some minnows for sure. We'll get out.
Wait. I'll tell you one thing, though.
Tell me.
When are you releasing this episode?
Probably next Monday.
Okay, so I'll probably have released my episode. I actually went through the FIFA rankings, data of who qualified to the World Cup, projections of who will qualify, and I projected the toughest and easiest possible group for the U.S. I'm not going to score the easiest one, but let me give you the toughest one, and then you tell me if there's not reasonable odds that we could get grouped.
Okay, go for it.
Japan, Ecuador, and Italy.
Japan, Ecuador, and Italy is the group.
Could we get grouped?
Oh, absolutely. Hey, we're supposed to play Ecuador now, right? That's the next friendly?
Yeah, no. Next is Japan and South Korea. Then in October, we play Ecuador. Yeah.
Got it. Yeah, Japan is no joke and Ecuador is no joke. I would like to think that if you're at home, though, you handle business. But then you see us playing at home against Guatemala. I know it wasn't the A team or whatever people want to say, but you're on the ropes against Guatemala.
Yeah, but the thing is, we're going to play them in friendlies. And I always try to tell this to the fan bases. Don't read into results about friendlies.
Agreed.
Too much. You want to evaluate player performance, how they behave in the game, how we play. Don't overanalyze a friendly, because we failed to qualify to the World Cup. And then right before the World Cup in 2018, we played France. And I think it was 1-1. We tied. Julian Green even scored. Remember that?
Yeah, I do remember. Yes.
And France won the World Cup. So the friendlies, it's results matter. You want to win it, but you got to more evaluate the performance. Like, for example, we played Uzbekistan in 2023. We beat them 3-0. So if you look at the result, that's a good result. That's a team that qualified already to the World Cup. 3-0, pretty good. We scored three goals in like the last 10 minutes and they were playing man down or something. So the performance was shit. It was terrible. And that's what you want to evaluate. The same way we could play well against Japan and lose 3-2. And I could come out of the friendly and say, not concerned. I thought we played well. This is a good opponent and we played well. That's what we got to look into. It's less about the result. It's a friendly. We'll see. Like Ecuador in World Cup qualifying is not going to be the same version we're going to get in the friendly. Like twice scoring a goal on them in World Cup qualifying. Everyone struggles.
Totally.
We might get a goal or two. It might happen.
Hey, I don't want to keep you too long, but next thing, if the U.S. had to qualify out of CONMEBOL, do we qualify?
Right now? No.
No, we just don't qualify.
No, I actually did the simulation too. We don't. I'll put it this way. We would play 10 games on the road because it would be 11 teams, right? There's 10.
You win zero of those probably.
I think we win zero. We'll get lucky to get a draw here and there. Maybe we'll get 3 points out of a few draws, but I don't like people are going to talk, even Bolivia, dude, Bolivia, everyone struggles.
You're dead. No, you are dead in Bolivia. There's no chance.
So we get 3 points. And then if you look at CONMEBOL World Cup qualifying, I mean, I didn't do the expanded version. That's the thing. But I remember when I did this, I went through like the amount of points that the last place teams would get. And when I did projections, because at home too, we're not winning most of those games at home. We'll beat Bolivia at home. That'll happen.
Yeah, you can beat Peru, maybe.
Chile these days. We'll beat Chile. But in World Cup qualifying, we're not beating or tying Brazil at home, Argentina, Uruguay, Colombia. Ecuador, because they struggle to score, I could see a scenario where it ends 0-0 in the U.S. I could see a scenario. But again, like most of the other teams these days, like we could tie or beat Paraguay, but Paraguay is also a tough team. It's just, I don't think we qualify with the old format. Now, the expanded one, 70% of the teams advance, right? 60 go directly, one goes to the Inter-Confederate playoffs. Could we finish ahead of, so we'd have to finish ahead of three. Bolivia, Venezuela is doing well too. I think with the expanded format, we would be fighting for that Inter-Confederate playoff right now. I mean, barely qualified in CONCACAF.
Yeah, that's true.
It was goal differential, the last one. So if you ask me, last cycle, we 100% would not have qualified.
Yeah. So bad, man. So what you're saying is basically that the FIFA rankings are bullshit.
Yeah, they use like the ELO rankings, whatever, for it. The thing is, just we get a lot of results against these really, really bad teams, and we don't lose very often, right? We just made it to the Continental Tournament final.
Yeah.
Again.
Yeah.
But look at who we beat, and it's crazy that we're ranked so highly when we lost to Turkey, lost to Switzerland, lost to Mexico, lost to Panama, lost to Canada. Like, how do you lose to these five teams that are no powerhouses? These are not even Panama. They're like good teams. Turkey's a good team. Switzerland's a good team. I think Mexico now is a good team. Canada's not that good of a team. Panama's not that good of a team. You lose to these five this year, and you're still top 20 in the world?
Right.
We're not. Like, right now, we're not. But apparently, were we ranked before the 2006 World Cup?
Fourth.
Like, top five?
Fourth.
In Mexico? And we got grouped?
We were ranked fourth, man. That was funny times. I think that was the time it was Bob Bradley, I believe, and that's when we got that result against Spain and got to the final against Brazil, right, in the Confederations Cup and lost to Brazil.
That was 09.
I think that's when the team was ranked fourth. I don't remember.
I thought it was 2010 World Cup? I thought it was the 06 World Cup. I don't remember. It was 06 or 2010. I think it was 06 that we were like fourth or something, top five. And Mexico was up there too.
Yeah, Mexico. Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Well, they've corrected it a little bit, but we're definitely not top 20 in my opinion, man. Brother, appreciate you coming on. There's so many things we can discuss. At some point, it'd be cool if we talked about players too and player profiles. And because I know you cover the U.S. men's national team. We didn't cover the U.S. men's national team really. But it'd be good to have you back.
Yeah, and I'll need to have you come along too. We have a lot to discuss. It'll obviously be on my channel more focused on the U.S. men's national team because that's mainly what we cover there. But there's a lot to talk about. Like you saw recently, we focused a little bit on college soccer. I think there's a few important topics in the U.S. soccer landscape that I should be covering too outside of the U.S. national team, mainly just to put the information out there. So there's a lot of things to talk about there too.
Well, Filippo, you're 10 times bigger than I am, 10 times the audience, but nonetheless, where can people find you?
Tactical Manager TV on YouTube, Twitter, Tactical Manager. I mean, the Twitter, they can just find me and you. Sometimes we reply to one another, but essentially if they look for Tactical Manager TV, they should be able to find it. But yeah, do as you wish.
Good, brother. I hope you keep at it and don't quit after the 2026 World Cup, because we need you.
Let's see how things go. Well, right now I don't plan on it. I'm just saying that there were times over the past like few months that I'm just like, that, kind of like what you were saying. I was like asking myself, what's the point?
Yeah. That is another part of the playbook, right? Is being toxic towards ones like us. And then we just throw in the white towel and we're like, we're out of here. We don't need this.
Well, I could also just after the 2026 World Cup, make this completely ignore like sponsorships on the channel and everything, go 100% unhinged. And that would be really bad for US soccer.
That's what I'm waiting for, man. That's what I'm waiting for. All right, brother. Thank you so much, dude. Have a good day. Have a good evening.
Thank you very much, Brian. Gary, look, I'm getting confused already.
We do look alike, man. We do look alike. I hope you're following a little bit of his work now with in USL League One. He's doing pretty good.
I haven't talked to Brian in quite some time too. I had him on 2 years ago. I had him on the channel 2 years ago, but no, I haven't been following. There's so much stuff going on. I'm also moving back and forth, so haven't been able to follow. But I got to catch up with him too and see what's going on there.
For sure, brother. Thanks, Filippo.
Thank you.
Well, that's it for today, guys. Thank you for listening. A reminder for coaches, you can get both the free and premium coaching programs at 343coaching.com. Don't let anyone tell you your teams can't win by playing dominant possession-based football while also developing individual players to the highest levels. Nonsense. We've proved it at every single level, and so have hundreds of serious member coaches across the country. Now that we've moved on to the pro level, we're delivering everything we've learned in the program. Don't wait and continue delaying getting on a proven path. And parents, 343masterclass.com is where you want to go to get a working compass for navigating the American soccer landscape with your player. It's pretty bad out there, but let our experience guide you. Lastly, if you're coaching 7v7, we've got you covered there as well. Go to 7v7coaching.com. Until next time, cheers everyone, and keep building.